Welcome to the Tour Life Podcast from Well Better Best. I'm Janine, your host, integrative nutrition health coach and personal trainer. In the past 10 years, I've had the privilege of meeting some of the most interesting and hardworking professionals in the music industry. Whether you are a fan of live music or someone who actually puts on the shows, you'll find some great stories, advice, and encouragement to live a happier, healthier life doing what you love. Today's guest is a tour manager and tour accountant who has toured with artists such as Tool, Florence and the Machine, Beck, Bass Nectar, Ryan Adams, Bauhaus, King Crimson, and Kraftwerk. She established and directed the artist transport departments for the Coachella, Stagecoach, and Desert Trip festivals. She's currently one of the regular co-hosts of the educational webinar series Tour Management 101. In this episode, we discuss mental health, learning to trust your gut, paying it forward while coping with the pandemic, embracing growing pains, and the realest and most hilarious advice to live by. You can find her on Instagram at MissMJK. Here is my conversation with the incredible Mary Jo Kaska. MJ, I am so happy I finally got you right here. Like, I can see you on my squadcast. How are you? Thanks so much.
I'm good. Yep.
Yeah. So you're in Denver right now. You just told me. What are you doing in Denver?
I'm based in LA now, but I'm actually from Denver originally. So I thought, you know, I'll come out here for a couple months, see some different scenery. My husband is 10-year track faculty at Cal State Fullerton. So he needs some time he's working from home now and he's the chair of his department. So he needs some time to do his work. And I was like, I'm going to come out here and help my family with some stuff, do some hiking and, you know.
Oh, that's so funny. I actually lost track of time today because I was, I get off work at 3:10 and I was like just asking my students for some feedback. And then I was like, oh my God, I have to go. Like, why? And it was just so weird because that would never happen during a regular school day. Like, I'm out as soon as the bell rings, like, I gotta go. But oh my gosh. But yeah, I mean, finding time. Well, can you tell our listeners a little bit about your story? Because I remember we had a conversation on the bus during the Beth Ditto tour one time. And there was that peanut butter story that you brought up about just having peanut butter on the rider the whole time. So I vividly remember that. But I know that, you have a really interesting background. And just listening from like TM 101, like I kind of want to know kind of what are those formative moments that got you from like, you know, music? Like, did you know that there was a career in music? And then how you actually ended up doing that?
Yeah. So I think it was funny. I was thinking about this and like, I think like my earliest moment I can think of when I was like really knew that I just was interested in behind the scenes stuff was when I was about 8. And like, my mom is from Scotland and, my dad was in the Air Force. I grew up in Denver. There was a big Air Force base there. And the Scots Guards, which are like, it's the Scottish like military, but they have like a pipe band, like a bagpipe band. And they were on tour. And my mom was friends with the pipe major. She'd like grown up with them. And so we went to the show and saw the pipe band. And then afterwards we went back to say hello to her friend. And I remember being absolutely fascinated by like the dressing rooms and all the road cases and like, oh my God, you know? And, I think that was probably the moment that I just got really curious about what goes on behind the scenes, you know, in a production. And then a couple of years later, I remember listening to a talk show on the radio with like the local promoter talking about what he did. And Denver's always been a pretty good music scene. We had Red Rocks. There's always stuff going on. It was like a thing, you know, to go to concerts. But I remember hearing that as well and going, that's what I want to do. Like at 10, I was just like, I want to be a concert promoter. So, you know, as you do, I went to tons of shows and I was super into the underground scene in Denver. You know, had friends in bands and everything. And one time a friend of mine came through on tour. He was a sound guy for, I think, Mr. Bungle, like way back in the day. And I, you know, went to meet up with him at soundcheck and have dinner. I saw this girl walking around on stage and I was like, who's that? He's like, that's our tour manager. And at that moment I just knew it. I was like, that's what I want to do. And so it was like, those are three really formative moments for me. And like after that, and I was just like, had seen my like first woman tour manager. I don't even know what her name was, but whoever she was, like, this is why I'm doing what I do. Cause I was like, that's what I want to do. And I was like singular minded from that point. I was like, I'm going to be a tour manager. That's what I'm going to do.
How does it feel to be able to like pinpoint those moments?
It's really interesting. I mean, I think, you know, you're doing the right thing, you know, when you just so clearly have those moments where you're like, that's what I want to do, you know? And I have like, you know, kind of interests that kind of are corollaries to that, but it's always been pretty much like boom, boom, boom. And I can connect the dots, you know. It took a while to actually become a tour manager and doing other stuff, but yeah.
Oh, wow. So how did you eventually become a tour manager?
So I ended up landing a job at a production company in Denver that they produced like some corporate stuff and private gigs, and they were also doing music festivals, but it was like for like the local radio stations, like producing like Classic Rock Fest, you know. And I got a job there, and I my boss kind of took me under his wing and taught me about contracting, had me running proposals. I was the production office manager, got to oversee the people that set up like the hospitality, and just kind of learned all the nuts and bolts from that. And then kind of simultaneously, I got a gig as a production runner, working at like Red Rocks and some of the other local venues. So I was kind of learning this stuff and meeting people that were on tour. I still had friends in bands. And at one point, one of my friends who was in a band had told me that their manager was going to be tour managing the Warped Tour, and maybe he could use an assistant. So I called the manager and he gave me Kevin Lyman's number, and I called Kevin like every day.
Persistence, right? Be polite and persistent.
Right. Because at that point I was like, okay, I have the experience. I know I can do this. I can run a production office. And he finally said yes. And he said, yeah, you can come out, but I don't have anything in the budget. So, but I can pay you per diems and, you know, you'll have a room and you'll get all the stuff and you'll learn. I was like, yes. So for 3 weeks on that first Warped Tour I did, I think actually after the first week, he found some money to pay me because maybe he knew that I knew what I was doing.
He's like, oh my gosh, she actually knows exactly what she's doing.
I didn't even care. I was just like, I want to be on tour. It's my dream to be on tour. And I was like, I remember getting on the tour bus and seeing my bunk for the first time. I was like, I'm on them. I made it. I'm on a tour bus with a bunk of my own. But I made some friendships and connections like on that tour, especially the first 2 years, that just led to everything else I've done. Like, that's how deep, you know, the connections in this business go. So
yeah, wow. I mean, it's, again, you know, it's like pinpointing those moments, right? It's like that persistence that you had, that little bit of fearlessness and like knowing what you wanted for that moment in time, you know, led to everything.
Yeah, which is really actually kind of unusual for me because I'm actually by nature, like it doesn't really seem like it, but I'm actually kind of shy, like about calling people about that. But when it's the moments that it's been something I really, really wanted, like that just goes out the window. Like I'm very singular minded about that stuff, you know? And it was weird because it was also one of those moments where I think, I don't know, you have those moments in life where just in your gut, you just know you're in the zone and you're like, yeah, this is what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, you hit that like flow state and everything just happens, right? It's like all the pieces just fit.
Yeah, I love when that happens. I love when that happens. You know, and I think I'm kind of jumping ahead of myself here, but, you know, kind of through life, I've sort of learned that I think one of our only jobs in life is just to get to know ourselves so well that we can trust when our gut is telling us to just go, you know, because when I've had those moments in life where it's just like, I've been able to just know myself well enough that I know how it feels to feel right in your gut, that I've like had the best outcomes, you know, you just go. Yeah.
You're totally right. Like that's a journey that every person, you know, has to experience, and you don't know what's right until you experience what's not right.
Yeah.
Have you ever had experiences like that where, you know, you got to a point where you started to realize like there's something off and I now am aware and I need to figure out what it is?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, ever since I was like a kid, well, I was like kind of a punk rock goth kid, you know? So it was like, you know, just kind of really the whole underground thing. So everybody, you know, is kind of disaffected, you know, but, you know, everybody's kind of melancholy and disaffected. But, you know, I think I always kind of really felt deeply that way. And, kind of always felt a little more melancholy than like most people that like I know. And then, you know, God, it's been more than 15 years ago, probably almost like 20 years ago, maybe. I ended up like actually seeing somebody and going like, what is going on? And I was diagnosed actually with dysthymia, which now they call it persistent depressive disorder. But dysthymia just sounds cooler, so I just stick with that. but basically, like it's like if say normal people are at like a 10, then dysthymic people are like at a 7 or 8 all the time. So it's like a mild but long lasting depression that just doesn't. I don't think it goes away. I mean, it's just like always there, you know. So like everybody in life has depressive episodes. It's just like a thing, you know, you might break up with somebody and like have a, you know, just get in a funk or whatever. But like if somebody is dysthymic, it can kind of hit harder or take a little longer to come out of. Cause like if you're starting from a lower baseline, you go lower. So it can be a little harder to come out of, but not for everyone. It's just, it's weird. Cause it's like, I don't know how to explain it. Cause like I realize that's always been, well, probably since I was like in high school, you know, or junior high or whatever. That's kind of always been my baseline. So that's just like normal for me. but I think I always kind of knew that there was something a little bit different.
Did it kind of like show up a little bit more when you did find yourself acting, you know, like being in flow, like when things, you felt like you actually were excited and focused about things. Did that help you point out that on a regular day, it wasn't necessarily the same? Or how was that experience? No?
No, I think if anything, now thinking about, like once I was able to, I remember those moments in my early career, you know, in my life where I was able to just like really, yeah, put things aside and like kind of get in that zone, you know. Now I think looking back after having done some work around it and really thinking about that, I think that actually being somebody who, I don't know, who like gets in your head a little more or something helps you recognize those moments. Does that make sense? You know, it's like, I think if anything, it kind of helped. I don't think it was the other way around where like getting in like kind of a flow state, be like, oh, something's wrong. I think it was kind of the other way around. It's like recognizing that you may sort of feel things a little more deeply or something connects you more with that state. Like it's a positive.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't really know how to describe it.
Yeah. Well, how were you discovering it? Like because you said you spoke to someone, right? You actually reached out?
Yeah, I think that there was a moment. It was, I think there was a time where, you know, I think I was like, I'm trying to remember. I think I was like dating somebody And he was like, it wasn't for very long, but he was like a real jerk. and he wasn't very nice to my friends. And that ended. But for some reason, I think I just had a move and, you know, and there was a lot of different stuff going on. And I was just like, couldn't get out of the funk about it, you know? And I was just like, this isn't right. And it kind of, yeah, it was like, this just doesn't seem right. Like I should be able to pull out of this more. And it just didn't, and it didn't seem like it should be that big of a deal. So, you know, and then I started thinking about it and I was like, God, you know, I've kind of always had like a little more challenging time, I think, than some of my friends. You know, when you've gone through like a breakup or you've, you know, gone through like a stressful time. And so I decided to talk to somebody about it. And yeah. And they were just, you know, they asked me a bunch of questions and they're like, oh yeah, you have dysthymia.
So was it quick or like, did you have to like,
oh yeah, he like nailed it like immediately.
Oh my gosh. And then you're like what?
And just started talking about like what the symptoms are and everything. And I was like, oh my God. Yeah, totally.
Wow. So was it that as easy as it was for him to like figure out what was going on? Was it that easy to find somebody to talk to? Because I feel like for me personally, like, I don't know if it's just in my head, but I'm just like, oh, you know, like everyone needs a therapist. I should speak to a therapist, but how do I find a therapist? I'm like, should I download Headspace or not Headspace? What is it? The
yeah,
like, you know, yeah, is it Headspace?
I can't or
not the meditation app, but the other one. Yeah,
yeah, the online one. I can't remember.
So I'm just like, what should I do? But you said it was pretty easy for you to find somebody.
Yeah, well, I had a friend who was seeing a therapist, and she recommended somebody to talk to. She was seeing somebody that she like really loved because she had gone through, she's actually a touring person and she had gone through, a breakup and was really having a challenging time, navigating being on tour and going through a breakup and needed to talk to somebody and she loved her therapist. And I went to her, we were like really connected. And then, she had suggested that, I go, cause I was just, during this time, it's like she was helping, but she's just like, I think you might need a little extra help. So it was just like, I went, I was with Kaiser, so I could go to see, they don't offer like psychological, you know, services that are like extensive, you know, but you can go see like a psychiatrist. So like I went and talked to him. It was just like one session, you know, cause it was just like in conjunction with her, you know? And, yeah, he just asked me all these questions. It's like boom, 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 you know? And then basically what happened was that for, you know, and they just assessed that it was chronic, but mild. So basically what ended up happening was, for about a year, I was on like a really low level, like just above subtherapeutic, level of an antidepressant and anti-anxiety. And what that was to do, so that worked for me. And what that was to do was to, just help me sort of know what it feels like to be closer to that 10, to like a normal person so that I could understand, what that felt like. So the way that I think I described it to you earlier, we were chatting for a minute, was that, you know, it's like people who live in LA, like there's helicopters overhead all the time. So like, you don't realize what quiet is until you like get out in the country somewhere. You're like, oh, you know, like that's what it sounds like. So it was kind of like that. It was strategic so I could kind of feel that. And then it's like, okay, what strategies, you know, what can you do? What works for you to make you feel like that without medication? And I mean, I think medication is like great for people, like if you need it. But for me, it was so my, like, we knew that like, I could just get myself to that point through other strategies, like, you know, exercise or just, you know, there's not a lot of sleep on tour, but like, but sometimes for me, I can recharge just by being by myself, you know, yeah. Like,
and being aware.
Yeah. Just right? Being aware, yeah. Honestly, just being aware of like what's going on so that it's like, no big deal, you know? Yeah. So for me, it's not like major, major depressive thing. And I'm not getting down on like medication. Like, I don't do medication, but it's just for me, what works just as well, is different strategies like exercise or meditation or, you know, and for me, it was a tool just to understand how you can feel when you don't have the helicopters, you know, or you're not living right next to like a freeway, you know, all the time.
Yeah. That's super interesting because so how long ago was it? It was like back in like 2012, my doctor, I could have sworn I had ADD or something, but my doctor put me on Wellbutrin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you were on too. And yeah, it was weird because like, I guess I didn't really know what I was supposed to feel. And I can't remember what changed. It was really weird. It was like, just like having an experience where like somebody's giving you something, and we live in a society where like you get a pill, you expect a change, right? And so having something that's a little bit more subtle can be really weird and like trippy.
Yeah, it's really, really subtle. And it's like, I took Wellbutrin and Buspar, which is a really mild anti-anxiety, because they just kind of worked together. It was like very subtle. And it was just like one day, maybe about 6 months in, all of a sudden I was like, oh, I don't have a knot in the pit of my stomach all the time. That was it. That was the only difference, honestly. Like, I was like, I'm on tour and I'm like, oh, I'm stressed, but I'm not like, I just don't have the knot anymore, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's like what CBD does for me now. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's a strategy as mm-hmm. well. That's the thing, you know, it's more about like strategy, you know? And I think that there's like I think there's a misconception that people think that not being depressed means being like elated. And it's like, no, it just means dealing, I guess. I don't know.
That definition, although it's important to try to understand it, it's really hard because it's really abstract and it's different for everybody. And, you know, I to this day, I'm not 100% sure whether I can say that whether it worked or not. Like, I don't know. What I do know is that what it triggered in me, just going through the experience at all, and my doctor even prescribing anything, you know, later on, as the years went by, I was able to look back at that moment and I started to kind of analyze my patterns. And I started to realize like, oh, well, I get into these patterns where like every like 2 or 3 years, I kind of get bored with things and I get frustrated. And something happens with me where I just, instead of working through it, I just want to give it up. And that was what I was going through when I was put on this medication. And so, you know, almost it just being like a bookmark in your life that allows you to go back and see how these things happen. Like, even if, you know, that's the use of it, like, I think it was really helpful for me because I looked back at that, I was able to start taking care of myself. And that's how I even got started on my wellness journey, you know? You know, so what are some of those tools that you use in order to cope so that you don't have to be on medication?
I mean, you know, I think that, some of it is just, honestly, sometimes it's just knowing that your brain is tricking you. Like, it's just being able to go like, oh, okay, that's like, I think everybody hates me. No, they don't. Like, that's my brain, you know? That's a strategy, you know, like learning like, oh, okay, like this is, you know, your brain goes to that place sometimes, you know, or, you know, having enough rest, which, like I said, if I'm on tour working on an event, that can be challenging. But catching up on, knowing on a day off, like, I need to catch up, you know? I mean, as a tour manager, I just want to go to bed anyway, but I won't go out late all the time, you know? Or eating well, you know, not drinking a lot, really to recharge, really, you know, those are the strategies, honestly. And also a strategy for me too, is to stay engaged, because like, I have this inclination to like, like there's a difference between like, okay, I need some time to myself to recharge and like not connecting with people, you know, like not keeping up with my contacts, not, you know, just dropping off contact with friends, you know.
Cause you confuse that recharging with solitude.
No, I like solitude helps me recharge. Also, I grew up in a family with seven people in one bathroom. So like alone time, like is just ingrained as being a very good thing. But
so you don't mean like physical solitude and like giving yourself some time. You just mean like completely like disconnecting emotionally as well.
No, like solitude. So I mean, there's a difference between like having solitude and having some time for myself to recharge. That's great. But sometimes, and I can take that a little far, you know? And also sometimes even if I am working and engaging, like I won't necessarily, like I'll sort of drop off communication or forget to call like a friend on a regular basis. And then it's like, if I haven't talked to them a while, it's like, oh shit, I haven't talked to them in a while. And then I just won't call, you know? And it's like,
yeah, that anxiety kicks in like, oh, they might hate me.
Right. And I think a lot of people do that, you know, it's just like, oh my God, it's been so long. But for me, a strategy is it's really, really helpful to try to stay in touch. And that's something that, in the past, especially couple of years, I'm trying to be way better at, you know, and especially during this time of like, you know, not doing any work and not having a tour and being at home for the last 5 months, that has been, first of all, it's like, I think it's a lifeline for a lot of us, you know, it's keeping us sane. But for me, it's been good practice, you know, to like stay in touch and mentor people. And, I think that doing the Tour Management 101 webinar has been brilliant for me for that. You know, it's like having structure, having a commitment. That's another thing that's a strategy, is like taking some commitments, not overcommitting, but taking some commitments and sticking with them. Like being accountable is such a good thing, you know, to keep you focused and keep you engaged.
Yeah. And it's nice because you're not doing it alone, because I feel like when you have too much time or when you can do something whenever you want, it's difficult to hold yourself accountable. So you know, so taking that element of community into the picture and using that in order to benefit you as an individual.
Yeah. And also I think doing stuff that benefits other people, whether it's volunteering, you know, for me, like I learned so much from the webinar, you know, and being able to connect with some of our students and do some mentoring and, you know, doing that kind of stuff that helps other people, it really helps your mental state. You know, I don't know, it's beyond, it's hard to put into words. It's beyond just feeling good. You know, I really think that there must be something, and there's probably been studies done, but honestly, I swear, like volunteering or helping people or mentoring, there's got to be some sort of endorphin connection there, because like you do feel really good. You know, it's like it really does. You know, maybe it's just getting outside of your own head.
I totally feel that. It's just like, even, I don't know, it's like when I'm in my classroom and I, you know, a kid opens up to me and I help them with something or whatever, right? You get like a rush of like dopamine and like, yeah. And you're just, yeah, you know, it is, you get a rush. And then, you know, even having conversations with people where you feel like you're connecting, those things really, I feel like they feed our souls.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that goes back to what I was saying, is I think one of our jobs in life is to like get to know ourselves so well that we start to recognize those moments. Like that's a flow state. Like that's a moment, you know? And it's like, oh, like I got this like little rush from helping somebody. That's the kind of feeling I might get if like the right opportunity is presented to me and I just know to say yes, because I can trust my gut. Like you start to feel those feelings.
Oh my God. Yeah. And now it, like, I'm picturing it and it makes so much sense, because, you know, it's, they say, follow your gut. You'll feel it. Like you'll know when it's right. But maybe it is, like, once you, like, if you take that feeling that you get when you make somebody else feel good, mm-hmm. that physical feeling that you get, if you ever experience that outside of that, mm-hmm. you know you're on the right path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then to like add to it, it's like once you get, and you've probably maybe noticed this in life, once you get in those moments, it's when stuff starts dropping in your lap. That's like amazing. You get those opportunities. And like, I don't necessarily think it's magic. I just think, I mean, my opinion is that like, because you're in that state, it's not like they're not coming at you before, but you are open to recognize it. Like they're coming at you, but now you just see them.
Yeah, it's like your third eye is open.
Uh-huh. I know it sounds very esoteric, but it's true. Honestly, that's how I ended up moving to Scotland.
Really? Tell me about that.
It kind of just dropped in my lap. I was on tour. So I'm a dual citizen. Like I'm a dual, my mom's from Scotland. So like, but I had just never really taken advantage of that. And I was on tour and we were, I'd been living in LA and, but I'd kind of said at the beginning of this tour, like if all goes well after like one or two legs, I was just going to put my stuff in storage. Cause I was just like, I don't really want to live in LA anymore. And I don't know where I want to land, but I want to land somewhere. And, we were doing a lot of touring in Europe. And, I was like, God, I should just like base here. Cause I can. And, it was so crazy because, I had just bought a car. It was this really awesome Jeep Grand Cherokee. I was like, oh, I love this car. But I was looking for places, you know, reaching out to friends, touring friends, and trying to find a roommate situation. At first, it was in London. And, you know, I was like, oh, I'll put all my stuff in storage, but I was still making payments on my car. And I remember thinking like, well, I was thinking about selling my car, but then I was like, well, what if this doesn't work out and I have to move back? I'm going to need a car. And then one day I just had this, like, I don't know, this weird, like aha moment, but it was just like, if you're going to move someplace, you don't need a car. You should just get rid of the car and I am not kidding. Like I sold the car. And like 2 days later I found my place, like literally like a roommate dropped in my lap which it was a friend of a friend, and he sent me the listing she was going to put up on Gumtree, which is like the UK equivalent of Craigslist. And it was like almost word for word what I was looking for.
Well, it's because, I've heard people say this, and I totally believe it. Like if you have sand in your hand and like you're holding onto it so hard, like it slips through your fingers and it's hard for you to even like grasp anything else, right? But if your hand's open, you can still grasp what you want and you're still open to receive, and there's no need for you to cling on to things.
Yeah. And it was crazy because like, I think it was one of those moments when I saw the email and she was describing what she had. Like, I think there have been times in my life where I would have been like, I don't know, let me think about it. But it was one of those moments where I just was able to recognize that kind of like rush of like, this is so right. And I just went. I literally like we were rapping, and I think the leg of the tour was ending in like 2 weeks, and 2 weeks later I was moving in London. And, like, but it was one of those moments where it was like I was able to recognize how like just perfect that situation was, and not even think, you know. And I think there have been times in my life where like I would have muddied that, you know, with like, well, I got to like get my stuff together, or maybe I should check around more. But I just remember very distinctly feeling exactly what you were talking about, that like sort of little rush of like in your gut going, don't even question this twice, just do it. And I did. It was like one of those times, honestly, it was like one of the first times I jumped that quick. And then when the tour ended, I was like, okay, I kind of like to stay living over here, and it'd be kind of cool to not go immediately back out on the road. And a friend who worked at an agency was like, oh, you know, send me your CV and I'll just send it out to some people. You should become a promoter rep, because that would be great. You're doing what you're doing anyway, but you'd get to be based here. And I was like, cool. And then like, God, I think a week later, I didn't even know she had sent it out. A week later, I got an email from the big promoter in Glasgow. I wasn't even thinking Scotland, you know, at all. And, but how perfect. It's like half my family, literally half my family is up there.
And so that was meant to be.
I know. And it was another one of, it was another one of those weird, like, flow state moments. I was like, okay, here we go. You know? So that's how I ended up living and working in Scotland. Did not know a soul in Glasgow. My whole family's in Edinburgh. So it was like, but I just went up there knowing nobody. I knew one person. I had one friend who I knew from like a completely different thing. It was like a women in the arts chat group online. And she was moving in a month to London. So it was like, I was alone, but it was great. It turned out great.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy how we always end up where we're meant to, right?
Yeah.
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 So where'd you go after that? So because you eventually moved to LA, you said.
Right. I moved back to LA. Mm-hmm,
right. Mm-hmm. You moved back. So then what happened?
So I was, I would come over, I was promoter repping over there, but the way it works there is, you know, you're a freelancer. So I was, you know, working, I was on a full-time schedule, but, you know, working on a per show basis. So I had the flexibility to go on tour, do other things if I wanted to. And, I would come over to the US to work on a couple of just regular gigs I had. So, I've been over there like 3 years and, came back here, to work on some gigs. And I actually was going to take most of that year off from the promoter because a friend of mine was going on tour for the whole year and asked me to house sit his house with a pool in LA. And I was like, I can't turn that down.
You're like, yes, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I had some gigs to work over here. And during that time, my parents they're older, they're elderly. And my mom was having some health problems. I thought, you know, it'd be cool to just stick around, you know, till the very end of the year, maybe the beginning of the next, just to be a little closer, you know, to be like a 2-hour flight away rather than a 12-hour flight. And during that time, I ended up picking up a tour that was, I was just wanting to fill my time with short things. So I could be back and forth with my parents more. And that 1 month tour ended up being a year and a half long, a year and a half on and off long. And then during that time I was going back to Glasgow in between tour legs. And during that time I met my husband there, who was doing his master's, and, we thought he'd more have more job opportunities in the US with his degree. And at this point I was working with an American artist anyway. So I was like, I can base anywhere. Let's get your green card and move back to the States.
But it was 90 Day Fiance.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with that show. I'm so sorry. I bring it up all the time. I'm like, so obsessed.
I know. Do you know what? You know what's so funny is I actually know somebody who was on that.
No.
Yes. Who? I do. They're the most undramatic couple, actually. So they're not like, yeah.
Oh, they're just like normal.
Who it is.
No. I mean, you don't have to. I'll find out. Tell me later.
They are the most like normal, like unassuming. Like, it's probably why there was no drama. I'm sure any drama that was on that had to be like invented because there's like no drama.
Oh yeah, you know, because like the ones that had the most drama ended up getting their own show. Like, yeah, that, you know, like that's, yeah, totally. Oh my gosh. Yeah. But yeah, so you brought him back to the States, and that's so cool. So yeah. There's another time, right? It's like you were you're always in the right place at the right time. Like, imagine if you had never never followed your gut instinct. Yeah. That first time, you would have never gone back, you know, like maybe it would have set you off on a whole different trajectory.
But I think any trajectory is like, right.
That's, you know what, true. I mean?
Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a big fan of that movie Sliding Doors.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And then it's like, you know, like, I feel like maybe those pivotal moments in our lives, we get there one way or another.
Yeah. I do think we get there one way or another. I do. But I do think that, like, you know, getting to know myself better. And that includes, like, if you know something's going on, like not being ashamed or afraid or whatever, of checking it out, that's what helped get me there. I've certainly, like right now, I'm like, I was getting ready to start a tour with a new artist. So like, I don't even have like the buffer zone that some people have, like, oh, I was in the middle of a tour, or I've been working for the last 5 years with an artist. So like, I'm still in that loop. Like, I am free floating right now, you know? So like, it's, yeah, I sound really up, like everything's perfect, but that's not really how it is, you know?
Let's unpack that feeling. I mean, you know, that feeling of uncertainty, I feel is kind of a thing that really does happen in touring, right? Like, you guys, you know, when you're going from artist to artist, like there's that little bit of time in between where like there's some uncertainty, and, you know, how is that? And then like, how has your journey, you know, getting to know yourself and figuring out how to handle those difficult moments, how has that helped?
So I think, I honestly think that as far as like being free floating, that is just, as a freelancer, that's something you just learn to trust, you know? And especially when you're starting out, you're like, oh my God, I'm never going to work again. You know, like a tour ends and you're like, oh, where am I going to get another tour if you haven't gotten a call? But I think getting some time under your belt, and is you start to look back historically and you realize like, my bills have always been paid. I've always gotten another gig. Like, I haven't gotten behind. At one point, kind of early on, I learned this strategy that like, if I had, you know, I was like, had a tour ending, I was like, oh my God, I have to pay all these bills, or I've got my rent. How am I going to do it? So I would write down like on a piece of paper, what my debts were, or like what I was worried about or whatever. And I would just like stick it in a box and like not look at it. And then at the end of the year, I would look at it and I would realize like every single one of those things had worked its way out. I'd paid all those bills. I had never gotten behind. I'd gotten a gig. And I kind of stopped doing that after a while, because I was like, I just was able to remind myself, you know what, historically, you've always worked. You've always landed on your feet. You've always found something. So I think that like the biggest uncertainty is the unknown. But when I look at the reality, I've always been taken care of, or been able to find something, or been able to land at my feet, especially if you put a little work into it. And that's something I was thinking about when we were talking, you're asking about strategies, is that, you know, that's kind of a form of like cognitive behavioral therapy. I'm a big fan of CBT.
Is it? So it reminded me of Dr. Sleep, you know, like in The Shining, that was like the exercise that the guy that was at the hotel that had The Shining, he told the little boy, I can't even remember any of their names right now, but
either.
But he told the little boy, he said, whenever one of these like ghosts comes at you, you have to put him in a box. And so in Dr. Sleep, every one of them was in a box in his mind. And that right there, wow.
Yeah. So I think as far as like, yeah, like being, it just, I think just with some experience and some time, you can be like, oh yeah, it's going to be okay. I think for me, it was before that sort of switch where you get enough under your belt that you can trust that it'll be okay. That's a challenging time. And people that I talk to that are just starting out, I mean, now is a little bit of a different time, but in general, I would be like, you know, it's going to be okay, you know, but it is scary as a freelancer until you get those connections and you have that experience. But I think that as far as now during this time, I think, honestly, personally, I think as somebody who's dealt with like anxiety, like I actually found myself being less anxious during this time. Cause I'm like, I trained for this. I'm like, I trained for moments like this. Like, this is what goes on in my head every day, that like everything's gonna fall apart. So I'm like, I'm ready.
Oh, but that says a lot.
That's not a conscious thing, but I was very surprised. Like, I mean, now it's going on and on and on, so it's different. But I think that, you know, I felt really, and I'm not the only person. Like, I talked to some other friends who felt this way. I felt like really, the beginning of this, like very strangely calm. It's like one of those moments as a tour manager when like all the flights get canceled and you just go into calm mode and fix it mode. I was like, yeah, It was very strange. Wow. I was like, because we're all on an even playing field. Like, everybody's out of a job now. So, like, I don't have to stress about anything. That was how it felt at first. That's not how it feels now.
Yeah. Well, but that point that you brought up about, like, when all the flights get canceled and then you have a switch, and that's something that has to come with practice. I mean, it doesn't just happen, right? Like, overnight, does it?
Well, that's also, it comes with practice. It comes with experience of, like, you know, like you said, it's like, I also think it's, I think you said something earlier about, like, you can't know what you want unless you know what you don't want. You can't, you know, it's like, you can't. Yeah. So it's like, you can't know how to fix something without having failed at it. So I think when you have enough times of, like, you know, something really going completely to shit, like, or you're like, you couldn't fix that flight or whatever, or you didn't know how early on in your career, but when you've done it enough, it's like muscle memory. Like, oh, okay. You go in that mode. You just go in that, like, okay, you get strangely calm and focused. So you go a little bit, it was a little bit into that mode. But I think also just having done, and this again is like sort of a positive thing about having dealt with like a level of depression and anxiety. It's like, you're kind of always kind of dealing with, like when other people around me who haven't really ever dealt with anxiety or like any kind of feeling inside of feeling more off, like I was like, oh, I totally know how to deal with this because I have the strategies. So I think that it can be a positive. Like when you have a hard time, like we're already, you know, if you're already practicing strategies for dealing with stress and dealing with down times, like down emotionally, you know? I think that has been a little bit of a, I hate to say positive, but I feel like I have, there have been certain areas during this time that I feel like I've actually coped better than some people. And that's given me the ability to be there for other people, which has been really nice.
Yeah. And I think that's what comes from experience, right? I feel like in life, we also, eventually there comes a time where somebody considers us wise. I don't know. Like, I don't know what that point is, but I guess it's once you've had enough trials and tribulations and you've survived it where you can actually give somebody else some of that wisdom and maybe save them a few of the lessons because you were able to go through the pain.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what's been so great about like doing the Tour Management 101 webinar. And so, God, so fulfilling. You know, it's exactly what you said. It was like, I was so grateful to be asked to be on that panel because it's been, you know, basically our take has been, what would we have wanted to know when we were first starting out that would have saved us a whole lot of trouble, you know, if we knew it earlier, you know, that we just had to learn on our own. And it's nice to be able to pass that on. Again, and again, it makes you feel really good, you know?
So. Well, and don't you think, you know, like that makes me think of back in the day when there people were in their own little communities and they really didn't travel far. You know, you had your little community, you had your family, you had your neighbors, and everybody helped raise each other. And everyone took wisdom from their elders. And then that's how the community was able to progress. But now living in such an individualistic society, it's more of a task to find something like that. And I feel that when we are in a situation where we recognize that there's things that we have to offer to society or to people who are walking in, you know, footsteps that we've walked in, it's almost our responsibility as a part of the society to help.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, everything you just said, you know, no, it really is. I mean, I think that whole apprenticeship kind of thing and mentoring thing is so important. It's like, you know, you can go to school and now in this business, you can get a music business degree, but there's something different to that connection through generations of like life or like an industry, you know, the trade being passed down, you know, that is that extra sense of connection, you know, that's, yeah, I think that that's something that has been missing. And I think that that's something also that, I mean, in some ways people are really, I mean, that's talking about people getting in, but people are really missing during this time, because that's something that's very, very particular to our industry. Once you're in it, once you're on the road, like you're there, you know, yeah, for all the, you know, there can be conflicts or dysfunction or whatever on the road, but you're tight in your family and, you know, you do learn stuff from your coworkers and all of a sudden that just got taken from everybody. So that's been hard.
So. Yeah. I mean, you were saying that you didn't want to say positive, but let's think of it as a silver lining, right? One of the silver linings I think of this time is that because we're able to sit with ourselves and we're able to kind of see what part and like what role we play in this world with amongst our friends, amongst the people that we know, in our careers, the industry that we work in, you know, we're able to really sit with ourselves and see, you know, like what part do I play in this as a whole? And I really think it's a transformational time for us just
to do too
as a human race right now.
Yeah. And I, you know, so many conversations going on now, obviously in general, and especially also in this industry, a lot more focus on mental health, on diversifying issues with women speaking out about stuff. Like I just think it's all a positive and it can only make things better. It's a lot of uncomfortable conversations, but like you can't grow without some growing pains. You know, you have to be willing to be uncomfortable to grow. And I agree with you. I think that this will ultimately hopefully be a positive time with some growth, personal, industry-wise, maybe societal, hopefully.
Yes, definitely. Oh, yeah. I mean, it is. It's easy to get down on things, and it's easy to sink into a hole and not want to come out. And it's okay. You know, it's okay to take your time and feel all the feelings, but it's like, I think it is important to recognize, you know, recognize those good feelings that we were talking about. When you're in your worst moment, it's like when you can feel good, single it out,
yeah,
and name it,
yeah,
and figure out what it is, and then strive to feel it again,
and figure out what it is that can help you feel that feeling. You know, it's probably not getting drunk, because you're just gonna feel, but like physically, you know, like feel the physical feeling. It's like, hey, you know, what can I do that's going to get me there? Some people it's exercise. Some people, like you said, it's like, it's helping other people. You know, I find out more and more, like we were talking about, like I get a real high from that. It's great. And it's reaching out to other people. I think that I hear so much, you know, people saying, oh, if you're down, know that you can always reach out to me. You know, if you're having a hard time, it's like, that should be flipped. Because the person who's feeling down probably is incapable. If you feel like, oh, maybe I should reach out to that friend, if you even have that idea, do it, you know, because it's going to make you feel good and it's going to make them feel better, you know, so.
Yeah, it's like, it's funny because, and I'm saying this because I've experienced it before, where sometimes you're a little bit shy to reach out to people because you're like, I don't know if we're that close, or like, I don't know how they're going to take it and all that stuff. But in my experience, and I'm sure you can relate.
Yeah.
I am never offended when somebody shows me that they care.
No. Oh my God, no. And you know what? If the person is having a hard time, especially if like they are having some sort of mental health issue or something, it's like they might be ashamed. They might feel really scared. They might literally be incapable of reaching out. They are not going to care. In fact, they're going to be so grateful, you know? But, and I agree, like if somebody reaches out to me, it really brightens my day, no matter where I'm at, you know? So yeah. And it can be, you know, like I said, by nature, I'm actually kind of shy. So like that is that, and that is one of my things. Like even now, like knowing loads of people and being connected to lots of people, like I always have that moment of like, oh, can I call that person, you know? But it's worth it. It's really worth it.
That's why I love the, like on IG stories, like I try to almost constantly have an IG story. Like that's how I connect to people. I don't know, but because I like looking at theirs, and I love that you could just like respond with a little emoji and that it like rains down on them. Like that's just, I feel like as much as like it's super cheesy and everyone, you know, like people might roll their eyes at it. Like that's such an easy way to just like show them that you're paying attention.
Oh my God, it is. And you know, what's like great is when somebody that you think doesn't even pay attention to your world, but all of a sudden does that, and you're like, oh, like they consider, you know, me their friend, you know, it's like, it's, I know that sounds like really small and kind of dumb, but like that can really make your whole day.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
You never know whose day you're making.
Oh, I completely agree. And I love it so much. Oh my gosh. Well, this was an amazing conversation and we're almost out of time. So I wanted to see if there was, if you can think of anything that someone has told you that really made a difference for you when you're getting into these moments where you're just, you're not quite sure what to do, or maybe you're a little bit down, like what's something that somebody said to you that really stuck out?
I'm laughing because hands down, the best piece of advice I've ever had in my life was, you're totally going to laugh at this, was when I was first starting. It's from my mom. So you have to picture this. My mom is this little Scottish lady. And my house growing up was kind of like, if you watch the movie, So I Married an Axe Murderer, like nuts. So, but funny nuts. So when I was first starting to work on like gigs, getting more work on gigs, and I don't even remember what artist it was, but I was very impressed that I was going to be working with this artist that I had been a fan of when I was like in high school. And I was telling my mom, and I was just like, oh my God, and like really building them up. And she goes, I can't do a Scottish accent, so I'm not even going to try. But she was like, Mary Jo, just remember, we all shit the same way.
Yes.
And that is my very favorite piece of advice I've ever gotten in life.
That is just some wisdom right there.
But you know what? Like, it's true. Like, we're all the same. You know, it like, we're all the same. Like nobody is better than you.
Yeah.
Just because you think they're real cool because they're a rock star, it's like at the end of the day, we're all the same.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no better way to put it, because I mean, and I think that's going to stick for like in everyone's memory, because it's so good.
That will never get out of your head now, because that happened to me like over 25 years ago.
I'm going
to
say that to my son sometime this week, guaranteed. Oh my gosh. Well, that was so fun. Thank you so, so much for coming on the podcast. It was great. I hope to have way more conversations with you and eventually find out who that couple is on 90 Day Fiancé.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I'll talk to you later. Bye, MJ.
All right. Bye.
Here are some key takeaways from my conversation with Mary Jo. 1. Being aware of your mental health is the first step to making it better. Seek help and don't be afraid to talk to a therapist. 2. In these quarantine times and after, remember to stay engaged by staying in touch with friends and family. Don't let yourself slip into perpetual isolation. 3. Take on some commitments and stick to them. When you're lacking structure and motivation, being accountable to others outside of yourself can be exactly what you need. 4. Do work that benefits other people. It will seriously help your mental state. And 5. Get to know yourself so well that you recognize when you feel really, really good, truly good. That's when you're in flow. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tour Life podcast. Be sure to give Mary Jo a follow on Instagram at MissMJK. And don't forget to like, subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, and to follow The Tour Life on Instagram at The Tour Life Podcast.